Survival podcast. I was just talking offline with our guest. He's like 3,000 plus. I'm like, yeah, 18 years. We just had on the 20th of June. I thank you to all of you who have made it where I could keep doing this for that long. You guys are awesome. I got some stuff I want to share with you guys today before we bring our guest on. And the first really is a thank you because we've done something not quite as powerfully as we did last time around. But we've managed to do something once again that independent authors generally don't do when they drop a book. And so what I've got up on the screen right now before we even get into what we're going to talk about today, I dropped Laws of Life Book 2 yesterday on Amazon. And it is number 7 in time management, number 21 in time management and business, and number 27 in entrepreneurship right out of the gate. That's pretty damn good. So thanks to all of you guys who picked up a copy and picked up one for a friend or a family member. I really appreciate that. I think we'll climb a little bit more before that initial surge wanes off. If we could break the top 10 in a category or two, that would be awesome. We were able to do that in actually 3 categories with the first book, but we did a big book bomb with that. This is far more organic. So thanks to all of you that have invested in that book. I really appreciate it. Before we get our special guest on, though, let's real quick just thank our sponsors of the day today. Sponsor of the day number one today is JM Bullion. I just mentioned the show's been around 18 years. You know how long JM Bullion's been a sponsor? 13 years. 13 years this company has sponsored our show. That means two things. One, you like them, and two, they like you. They have the same silver you'd get from Monex, Apmex, you know, Lear Capital, any of these companies are advertising on Fox News or whatever for a little bit less. I can directly speak to the president if there's a problem. I've had to do that about once in the past 3 years, but it's there if I need to. They do a discount for you guys if you're members of the MSB. All your orders ship free, and it's the same silver you get anywhere else. So if you're looking to stack silver or gold or platinum or any of the precious metals, check out JM Bullion first. Again, they've been a very loyal sponsor for a very long time, and they've never, to my knowledge, ever let a customer down out of this audience. That's saying something. For anybody to sponsor anything for 13 years in the world of podcasting is pretty amazing. And you know what's cool? They're not even our longest-term sponsor. Next up today, a little bit newer sponsor, been around now with us for, I think, since just before COVID. That's like 7 years now. Start9 private servers. I just had Jesse Markowitz on last week to talk about all the cool things that you can do with a Start9 server. You can basically be your own bank. You can accept Bitcoin payments, run your own Bitcoin node, run Lightning nodes. But there's a lot of other really cool things that you can do with it. Private communications, access your files from anywhere, access your passwords from anywhere, do it all fully encrypted. And do it in a way where you are not part of like this honeypot of data sitting there. You know, you're probably not worth hacking, but the place where all your information is with like millions of other people, it probably is. Plus, you have digital sovereignty with Start9, and they'll do a 9% discount for you if you're an MSB member. And if you're a Fold card user, you can stack it with the Start9 discount on the gift card in Fold and then stack Satoshis on top of it. Pretty cool people we have sponsoring our show, isn't it? So make sure you do business with them. Again, our sponsors stick around. They're not here for a day or three and then gone. They stick around because this community engages and they engage back. All right, with that, I want to bring our special guest on, Chris Daigle. I found Chris on LinkedIn, which I honestly until recently hadn't spent much time on since, about 2012. And I just happened to see a post that Chris did. And he was bragging on himself a little bit for a good reason. He was showing the largest audience he had spoken in front of, and he said he just completed 50 real-world AI corporate implementations. And I'm like, for all the BS that gets thrown around, this is a guy I want to get on the show, I want to talk to, because he can tell you what's actually happening in the workspace with AI, what people are doing with it who really have to, what the concerns of people running companies, the C-suite is, and everything in between, from the dishwasher to the CTO. And Chris, man, welcome to the show. Thank you for agreeing to do this interview.
My pleasure, Jack. And just, we didn't talk about this already. I discovered your podcast in 2012, maybe.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I've actually been a listener off and on. I mean, the past 3 years of running a startup in the AI space, I haven't done much more than AI stuff, but
Yeah.
So it's cool to be on here finally after.
That's awesome. I knew you said you'd listen, but I didn't know if maybe you just went off listening to an AI episode or something.
No.
Very cool. So can you tell people, like, how did you get into this space in the first place? Like,
yeah,
if you go back to 2012, you probably weren't in the AI space because there wasn't much of one yet. I mean, I actually was running a company that was in the very early edge days of AI doing predictive algorithms for cellular clients. But that was nothing like we have today. So how did you migrate from wherever you were back about that time into this field?
So I'm an entrepreneur just born that way, right? I don't know that you can really teach entrepreneurship. Yeah. And so entrepreneurs, we have the blessing and the curse of being able to see opportunity everywhere. And when ChatGPT 3.5 released in November of 2022, I knew it was going to be a huge opportunity, but I thought it was going to be an opportunity for somebody else. I'm not technical. I'm a business operator, but I'm no programmer. I'm no data scientist or anything like that. And after it took a few months, and I knew, like, I was like, man, there's going to be a lot of money getting made here, because I heard this a while back. In business, you're either a missionary or a mercenary. And mercenary doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing unethical things. It just means that you're in business to accumulate resources to do what you want. And I've always been a mercenary in business. I hadn't really found anything that I was passionate about, and this was going to be one of those things. So once I realized that anybody, any listener here could do the same things I'm doing because it's natural language interface, I said, okay, wait a minute. I understand business. And if I can figure out how to introduce generative AI into business, we can, like, there's opportunities here. And in March of 2023, I started chiefaiofficer.com with the intention of training and certifying non-technical business professionals how to be the kind of the AI voice, the AI leader for either their company or their network or their industry. And just kind of, it's been an all-encompassing endeavor since March of 2022.
So I've noticed something. I'm actually working on a book for the AI space right now. One of the things I said in it was that the people who I've met who get the best results from AI, and I'm just talking LLMs, are people that have run companies, run departments, or they were entrepreneurs. Yep. And I feel that it's because you have to manage AI the way you manage a team, and not just an employee, but a team. Because as you full well know, if I have a specific task, I'm either going to use a master prompt or build a specific, like custom agent or GPT for that task. And then I have to manage each one like members of a team. And I think that because of that, people with some business experience and some team leading experience don't treat it like a giant genie. And a lot of people who don't have that experience, it's exactly the problem they run into. Would you say that's about right?
Yeah. And when I'm addressing an audience, one of the first things I'll let them know is when it comes to AI, you've already done the hard part. The years that you've spent in your career and like learning the language of your industry, that's the hard part. The tools are easy to use. If you can translate what you know about your industry into questions, just like natural language questions into the large language models, the models, like, you have the genie, truly. But without that context of, what you want to do or how you want to approach a certain problem in your industry, it's like an advanced Google.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for that to work, then you have to know what winning looks like in the task that you're performing.
Yep.
And I think that's the big thing that, like, you have people out trying to do like an RFP for a project that they need done at their office, but they've never done one without AI. So they really can't do a good job of doing one with AI. So I like the way you put that. You've done the hard part, developed the expertise. The people we need to really think about are like the 22-year-olds that have not developed the expertise yet.
Yeah. And, going back to what you were just saying. So a friend of mine, and you guys may know him on the show, his name's Mark Moss. He's a Bitcoin maximalist. Yeah. So Mark told me, he said, I look at it like 10-80-10. The first 10% is me being very clear on what I want to get from my session with GPT or whatever.
Okay.
Next 80% is me hitting the enter button. The model does the heavy lifting. But that final 10%, it's not copy and paste and ship it. It's you as the human giving it the once over and saying, or, hey, this is great, I'm ready to go. So please, users out there, listeners, Don't just take what it gives you and send it out. It's your responsibility to give it the review and use your knowledge and the way that you talk and that sort of thing to make sure that it comes across as authentic and not like purely synthetic output, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, definitely. The way I refer to it is you need to own the output, right?
Yep.
And so you're putting your name on it. You might want to look at, like, if I came to your house and we were going to do a big remodel project in your kitchen, and when I got done with everything, I said, yeah, we can do your kitchen for $18,000. Here's a contract. If you have an atom of brain matter in you, you're going to read the contract before you sign.
Yeah.
And you should treat the output of AI like a contract. That funnels well into my first kind of question for you off my notes here. When you go into especially larger organizations and they're trying to adopt AI, what are like maybe the three most common problems you see with that adoption?
Yep. And just for the audience to understand, we don't by preference, I don't work with big enterprises. I would rather work with we call it lower middle market. So maybe 20 million to a few hundred million is kind of the sweet spot for us. And I'll tell you why. At the large companies, it's a lot of show, and it's a lot of and if anybody works at those, you know, it's a lot of meetings. So I would say the three top things that I hear from business owners are like, hey, we'd love to use AI more, but we don't know where to use it. We can't figure that out. That's the number one. Number two would be we'd love to use it more, but we don't understand the risks. I've heard about, you know, people getting their information into the models and blah, blah, blah. And then the third issue that we hear most frequently is we'd love to do more with AI, but we don't have anybody to help us. We don't know anything about doing this in the company. So that seems to be the pattern of the three issues, kind of the impediments for most companies.
I get why you don't want to work with like your Fortune 1000s and below that, right? Like down here, like Fortune 100s.
No.
Even the companies the size you're working with, there's a lot of internal political things you have to migrate through. But back when I was in telecom sales and we were selling a company like Alcatel or whatever, the number of committees, what an engineer already said, this is literally the only part that will work in this and still the number of committees you had to go through, signs off, buy-ins, you know, and then you get down to the purchasing person and then you have to take them to lunch and like, you're doing this whether you want to or not, but you still have to go through it. And yeah, companies of that size are really difficult and they don't move fast enough. This is a rapidly moving market.
Yeah. And you know what else, Jack, is like they don't know their employees. So for them, if I bring AI in there, there's a high likelihood that they're going to fire a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And the companies that we work with, even if it's got, you know, 500 employees, the people who are making the decisions about AI, they're thinking about the people, which I'm glad that I can be a part of that.
Yeah, I agree with that a great deal. And I have yet to find many people who have lost their job that when you really drill down, well, AI is why I lost. And you're like, well, okay, well, who's doing your job right now? Well, Bill is. Well, then AI didn't take your job. Bill took your job. Yeah. Right? I mean, that's, you know, can you tell me that AI agent is 100% doing your job from the time you would normally clock until you leave? No, then AI didn't take your job.
Yeah.
You got cut because you were, and I hate to put it this way, but you're probably in the bottom tier. And I do think a lot of these larger companies, the kinds you don't work with, they're covering layoffs with an AI excuse, right?
Yes.
Like some of these companies, like Bezos got called out hard. So Amazon lays off like 14,000 workers, and a couple months later, Bezos gets interviewed, and the interviewer actually does their job. And actually pushes back and he goes, well, yeah, you know, it really wasn't AI. And then like another 6 weeks later, they hired almost the exact same number of people on H-1B.
Yeah.
And
that's
not AI taking your job. That's H-1B taking your job. And I'm not going to get political on that or anything, but let's just be clear about what actually happened.
Yeah, for sure. On the so everybody listening, ChatGPT isn't going to take your job. But if I know your job, and I happen to be somebody who's invested in my time and my treasure and learning AI, the reality is I'm just probably a better candidate, right?
Yep.
I can do more. I can do it faster. I can do it at higher quality. But that's not AI. Again, just like you said, Jack, that's not AI taking the job. It's somebody who is just a better fit for that role because they're accelerated or amplified by AI.
I mean, let's say we go back before everybody was using spreadsheets. And then spreadsheets came out and I got really good at using spreadsheets and your job was in financial modeling and I adopted the spreadsheet and you didn't. Are you going to tell me Excel took your job?
Yeah.
right? Yeah. Or did I take your job because I learned to use a tool that you don't know how to use? Like,
yep.
It'd be like saying the carpenter lost their job because he refused to get an air gun and insisted on using a claw hammer. And I went in and did the framing work in a day by myself instead of 3 days with two helpers. Well, yeah. Obviously, that's not the nail gun didn't take your job. You know, some of these people, I think they would go back in time and get rid of the sawmill and the combine. And like, that's how it feels sometimes. One of the things I got in my notes here, too, though, is you once said, or heard you say, frequency is not proficiency when it comes to AI. I thought it would be a great yeah. saying to expand on here for this.
So one of the things, whenever I address a room, I always like to say, okay, like kind of where is everybody? And I do this thing on a scale of 1 to 5. Where are you? And if it's on Zoom, people put in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1 is I'm new. 5 is I should be teaching the class. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm always encouraged when I see 4s and 5s. And when I dig in, I'm like, hey, man, so that's awesome. What are you doing with it? And they go, oh, I use AI all the time. Yeah. I get it. But what are you doing with it? Oh, I write emails and summarize documents. Great help. Sure. But AI is capable of doing more than writing the email and summarizing the document. So I think a lot of people, they're like, oh, I know AI well enough just because they use it with high frequency, but it's not very deep application. And they think that like, I've got it. I'm an AI power user. Well, no, the frequency doesn't necessarily mean that you're as capable as I am or somebody that was truly like a 3 on that 1 to 5 spectrum. So please don't fool yourself that if you're using it a lot, but you're using it for the very shallow applications, there's a whole world out there of AI usage for you to discover that you're going to really enjoy.
Yeah, it makes me think back to my days of hiring people and going through resumes. This is like early 2000s and looking at them and see back when people cared that you even knew how to use PowerPoint or Access or Excel, and yeah. they would have all these software products and like how many years of experience they had. And it's like, I don't care. I care. What did you do with it? Right. Do you mean you use Excel every day 100%. Because somebody sends you a thing and you do some data entry? Cause that's yep. way different than financial modeling or modeling takeoffs for installation projects or something.
Yep.
Like that. They're very, very different things. The tool is not the skill. The tool is the enabler of the skill.
Great way to put it.
You also say AI is already in your building. I completely agree. But what does that mean for business owners and leaders of these companies, you know, that are not yeah. like I'm a solopreneur. Of course, it's in here. It's right there. I'm looking at it. Right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
these people, you know, they're running companies and they're really what I'm hearing in that is they're hesitant. But what you're telling them is Bill over there in finance is already using it. Is that what you're yep. saying?
100%. And so in the industry, we call that shadow usage. Even if the company says, hey, guys, we don't have an official approach to AI. We don't want people using it. Somebody's going to be in the stall on their phone. They're going to be doing their like they're going to or they're going to be at home. And here's where the danger is. If I've got people in my company that are using a free account or their own personal accounts, the opportunity for them to put some information from my company into AI where their settings aren't configured for the highest, you know, security environment. That information may go and train the model. And we've done this. We've been able to pull competitors' information up as responses to queries. Now, and also, if I've got, you know, a great employee, they're using AI, it's on their account, they're doing some cool stuff. Somebody hears that they're an AI-capable employee, they get poached. When they go, yeah. they take their account with them.
Yeah.
All of that information about my company that they were using, that's leaving with them. Therefore, we always recommend that if a company is going to say, hey, we're going to start messing around with AI, we want people to use it, you as the owner provide the license through a company account. It's $20 a month. Trust me, if you spend a half hour training people, you'll get your ROI on a monthly basis, right? But
yeah.
you own it. That person leaves. That's okay. You know, God bless. Good luck. But their information, all the information that they put into the large language model on my behalf stays inside my company. It's very critical misstep by a lot of folks.
That's actually incredibly insightful and a serious risk.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, I think you literally still have to sign some kind of like multi-page document to work at Kentucky Fried Chicken so yeah. that you don't take away the secret recipe, which yeah, everybody yeah. knows anyway, right?
Yeah.
But like it shows me like another hole in something that I tell people to do all the time. And I guess it would still be fine, but I wouldn't want it done with an internal document, right? That's not designed for external use. And so I get newsletters all the time. One of the AI ones I subscribe to is Jeff Woods's newsletter.
Sure.
I don't have time to sit here and read it.
Yeah.
I'm busy. So I take his newsletter, copy and paste it in the network, notebook LM.
Yep.
I have a specific way that I want that type of material reviewed. I have personas for the hosts and I have a preloaded prompt. So when that comes in, I'll drop that in there. I drop that prompt in there. And when it's done and I'm doing something else, audio is great. I can multitask, right?
Yep.
And so I'll listen to that. And that actually gives me a better understanding, I think, than if I read it and I have more retention from it. And so I recommend business owners do that. But I really, you know, like they probably shouldn't be doing that with your internal document, right? Especially if you don't have your own, you know, account for the company that they're using.
Yeah.
That, like you said, now I've got an audio of your internal information sitting on somebody's, you know, iPhone. That can be shared, you know, and once anything gets out in the ether, it just propagates wherever it wants to go.
Yeah.
And with a few little operator strings in Google, if somebody planted it on a web server and it's in the public domain, I could probably find it about your competition if they have it.
Yep.
That's an interesting risk, Chris, I really hadn't thought of.
Samsung lost some patents because of that exact thing back in 2023, early on with AI. Some of their engineers did what they were trying to do a good job. They were using models. It wasn't configured correctly, and that information became public domain. So, and one thing, Jack, before we move on, I just want, like, guys, don't be scared. If you're running a business, don't let this be the reason that you don't do it.
Sure.
As I talked about, they don't understand the risk. If you understand the risk, you can mitigate the risk. So it's called governance is the official word in the AI space. There's lightweight solutions that you can introduce to where you don't really have to worry about this, and you can feel confident that your people are using it safely. But unless you have that in place, I wouldn't be, you know, highly enthusiastic about rolling it out to everybody because people make mistakes. 77% of people, this is a stat from an article I saw in October, so 6 months now, 9 months actually, wow. 77% of employees have put company secrets into ChatGPT. Not because they were doing anything malicious. They just didn't. Nobody told me I couldn't. Right. So think about that. If you've got employees that are using AI, but they're not using your accounts or you haven't done anything to train them.
And there's some fairly, you know, consistency in like you're like, I'd say your second rung employee, not your absolute bottom of the stack, but your, you know, not your mailroom guy, but your guy that's actually doing some important work. But, you know, he's still letting out nobody reporting to him. Maybe he's a 5-man team with, you know, direct reporting to somebody above them. It's in middle management. They often don't realize that some of the data that they're looking at is even data that needs to be protected. To them, it's just what they see every day. And maybe nobody really explained to them that this one little tiny string of code or this one little blurb that was mentioned in the meeting notes or something, like we really don't, like we're spatially sprockets and we really don't want Cogswell Cogs to have this. Just to age myself a little bit there, right?
Yep.
Like, and they don't even know. So it's not even malice. It's just a lack of knowledge. And if you haven't put in guardrails, and not necessarily techno guardrails, but like policy guardrails, that person can be excused for their stupidity because they don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have no idea.
You'd be surprised. I think that the current like number that I'm hearing regularly is only about a third of companies that are actively using AI have done anything related to a policy that defines like what's safe usage. So you got all these companies, even big name companies, companies you're doing business with, they've got people doing it. And the leadership, like they just haven't caught up with the fact that, oops, there's risk here.
Hmm.
Don't be that guy if you're listening to this. It's an easy fix.
Are there any other risks that employees using AI tools without leadership knowing about it are kind of opening up?
So I wouldn't say necessarily the employees. I want you to think about this. If you're running a business, hopefully your business is insured. And insurance companies, you know, they make money by not paying out on claims. So they're looking for reasons to say, hey, wait a minute, this policy only covered you up to this. So check with your insurers, check with your broker and say, hey, listen, we're starting to use AI in our business. Is there any language that's been introduced that we need to be aware of? Or is there any additional coverage? Right. Please check that out. Now, your clients, if they are not asking today for your business, they will start and say, hey, are you guys using AI in the support of my account? And if you say yes, and they say, okay, great, can I see your AI use policy, or can I get an idea of how? And you're like, I don't know. Not a good look. It's not just you. I want you to think about the other side. You've got vendors, and those vendors are supporting your business. And if they've got employees who are shadow using AI from the stall or on the break or in the personal account with your information, again, they don't know. They're just doing, they're using AI in their job, but it's your data. So I would check with my vendors and I would say, listen, you know, are you guys using same thing? Are you using AI to support my business? If so, can you walk me through how you're making sure that your employees are doing it safely? Those are three areas that people, every time I say it, they're like, oh, hadn't thought about that. So don't get caught off guard.
All right. We got a question mark there. What should a good AI use policy include then? Like, I'm sure that's something you help your clients develop. I mean, and I'm sure like you can sort of templatize it and then it has to be customized, but there are probably pillars that need to be in place, just like a terms and use. You customize it to the company, but you have things that you absolutely just don't leave out.
Yeah. One of the first things that you're going to want to do is make sure that the approved tools are listed, right? Like these are the AI tools that we're going to allow you to use. Now, to support that, you want to make sure that those people are trained on how to use those tools. Secondly, one of the things that we always encourage in an AI use policy is kind of like a green light, yellow light, red light environment that clearly explains, hey, you can use AI for this type of activity all the time. Green light. Yep. Yellow light, hey, you can use AI, but just clear it with your lead, team lead or whatever, that they're okay with it.
Okay.
Red light, hey, don't enter, you know, HIPAA information, like be very careful and never use AI for these activities.
For these things.
And that makes it very explicit for the user to go, and if you need to, print up a little matrix that they can look at. Oh, can I use, oh, wait a minute. Nope, I can't use AI for this. And that is, and then I always encourage companies, train the people on the policy and then have them sign it. Like, hey, I acknowledge that I understand what's going on here. It's the best you can do at this point to protect it. Now, there's some other things. You could have like a layer that sits between the input and the actual large language model that looks for certain keywords and can reject it. If, you know, you've got a user who's entering in something, that filter can say, hey, wait a minute, we're not doing that. You can set up a local large language model. Most of those solutions are outside the scope of where people start. Eventually they might get there, but you don't need that to start.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. I didn't know, like I said, when we were talking offline, I didn't know you had a podcast of your own until this morning. And I was listening to one you did with a gentleman that's involved in the education space. He's like running a school out in California. And he talked about how, you know, they have certain things that you safeguards, like if the child starts discussing self-harm, like it stops. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, it has a lot of applications because you could build custom tools and say, this is the custom tool you have access to. And I haven't tested this yet. I might have to do 5 or 6 iterations to get it to work. Yeah. But I could totally see creating a custom like GPT or a Gemini Gem or something like that, that if this thing happens, then you stop and you say, I will not proceed until you enter a code, like a PIN code. And that means the supervisor, or in the case of education, a parent would be able to see what led to that and go, well, that's a false alarm 7195 or whatever it is. Or, honey, we need to discuss this if it's a kid, or we need to go to the conference room if it's an employee, because you're doing things that are clearly outside the scope. And that would be one very low tech monitoring solution for smaller use cases, right? Like, I think you probably do better than that with a client that's a $20 million a year turnover client, but there's a lot of small business people here, because I think what we have to start looking at personally, and I'm sure you've seen stuff like this, everybody's worried about the risk of using AI. I'm like, man, you can invent the risk of not using AI, but every risk that AI poses already exists. Like, what if my sensitive data gets out? Well, you mean the sensitive data that one of your employees could walk into your business any day with a thumb drive and take and do whatever? Like, they already can do the thing you're worried about. I'm sure that you have some sort of screening oversight process to prevent this. You know, people, well, what do I do if my kid cheats with it? What do you do to prevent your kid from cheating now?
Yeah.
Like they can't go to Wikipedia cut and paste and alter. Like, is this really anything new?
Nope. I would say that the same standards that you would apply to any technology, whether that technology is paper and pencil or USB thumb drive, the same approach be taken with AI.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit more about like why AI training is important? I don't think companies are doing this enough. I think we've hit on some reasons already, but I think what happens is companies decide they want to do AI, and eventually somebody high enough in that company to make it happen decides it. So they issue an edict and they open up AI. Either it's a custom solution from an enterprise company, or it's we got everybody a corporate account or whatever it is, and they say go. And I think that can lead to a lot of chaos.
You know, on like the most benign impact is that you're spending this money and people aren't really getting any use from it. They're just like, I hear this a lot. If you don't follow up with them, you go back in 30 days, you check on people. They're like, oh, it was just easier to do it the old way. Mm-hmm. Right? 'Cause they're already trained on that. So, you know, the safest outcome is that that's the only detriment to your company. What I see is that without training, look, for the past 25 years, if we wanted information from the internet, most of us were trained to Google it. A Google search query is nothing like the interaction you should be having with a large language model, right? But most people, that's the translation. Oh, this is kind of like Google, I guess. And they use it and then they'll be like, AI is not that good, right? Because again, that 10-80-10, the first 10% is you as the human knowing what you want. Most people I see, they use AI kind of like a drive-up window. I got a question, got my answer, I'm gone.
Yep.
Real users, it's dynamically introduced throughout the day. And it doesn't mean that they're using AI all day long, but like somebody like you, you're at least considering, hey, could AI help me with this? Maybe, but I'm going to, like, you know enough about it to make that decision on the fly. And I think that exposing your teams to ways, we call it thinking in AI, where something happens and they're working with it and they go, oh, wait a minute. Could I do this? Oh, if I can do that, I can do this. And like the matrix begins to unfold for them, right? And we got a question in the thing, and I want to just tell that user the same thing that I tell everybody else. Once you start thinking in AI, the next step for you is you're going to go, I wonder if AI could, how could AI, you start ask the models. You don't need to wait for the expert. You have the expert, but it's this behavior shift. It's this reflex that you need to create of, man, I'm stuck. What can I do with AI? Guess what? Hey, AI, what can I do with you? Right? Like,
you
need to get this question here. It's a great question about IP. And I would tell that person, ask the models. Take that question in there. And now if you still need help or whatever, then maybe approach the expert. But this gap between you having a query and you getting an answer doesn't need to wait on my expertise. You have that at your fingertips. So it's important that, because look, the tools, they're easy to use. If I can train my team to think in AI and to just have that reflex of asking the models. And then the third thing is, look, tell others in your team. If you see somebody doing something, quote unquote, the old way, go over there and say, hey, let me show you this way that I'm doing it, right? Like you start to evangelize internally. Mm-hmm. If you're doing those three things, that training, like, sure, we'll spend 15 minutes on how to use a tool, but the tool is not the training. The training is the culture shift, the headspace shift that needs to happen about how you think about using this tool.
It's like you have to imagine it's like a 5-year-old that will steal the cookies out of the cookie jar, but it has 187 IQ.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So you have to be very specific. And when you ask a question, you have to pin it in to where did you brush your teeth? Yes.
Yes.
Why is there no water on the toothbrush? Right. Like that. Like you almost have to treat it like that. And again, I think that's why people that have because you don't think that's what you have to do as a manager in a corporation until you become a manager in a corporation. And then did you do the report? Yeah. Is it done? Yes. Where is it? Well, it's on my desk. Well, when it's done, it's supposed to be in my inbox. Well, I have a couple things left to do. So when I asked you if it was done, right?
Yep.
We're starting to head towards the HR door on your way out here now because we're not getting – like because you've been through that, when you see AI do it, you go, oh, I know what to do now. And I think other people get frustrated and throw their hands up. I think the training is really teaching people to lean on what they know. And then like – it's also like What do you do? Even if you're an employee, if you could hire an assistant to do it,
yes,
you would have them do it because it's repetitive, but it's not quite enough for you if you're independent to hire someone. Like, you don't want to hire somebody to work 3 hours a week because they're not going to show up. It's not, especially if they have to show up 3 days and work 1 hour each day. Like, getting that 3 hours back is great, but it's not worth an employee. And it's also repetitive in nature. Like, if you, like, I love what you just said, right? If you don't know how to approach that with AI, go have the conversation with AI. This is my situation. This is my repetitive task. What can I build that will do all of it or part of it for me? What I've done with my show, like today when you came in, you filled out a guest form. It's sitting right here. And this was not designed for AI, but it turned out to be perfect for it. I've been using this same guest form since 2009. It has you put in your bio, all of your links that you want included in the show notes. It has you bring me setup questions. That's your pitch to me that I know it's worth having you on the air. But now I can take all that data and I have a writing assistant and I give it that and I have it draft me a paragraph, right? Well, I take a couple of paragraphs. I take those paragraphs and I then own that output and I reiterate it. Then I take that and I have a whole custom agent that is specifically just to prepare the show. I drop that in. So you're doing the same thing I am. And I'm like, take all these questions and format them into paragraphs for me. And then I'll be like, well, go out and research this guest's name and tell me if there's anything about him I don't know. And then bring that back to me. And then I'll say like, okay, I need a thumbnail image. And then it will discuss that. And then it'll make the thumbnail image. Now I need an X post and whatever. And because of the way I'm doing it, nothing that I'm putting out looks like AI slob. In fact, I would say the only thing you could look at and say, I know that's AI, is that thumbnail image. Well, that's what it would look like with Canva if I did it with Canva anyway. So it doesn't really matter, right? Like, but since I have to do show notes 3 times a week now, and I used to do 5, but I'm down to 3 a week now, and I have to do it, and there's a formula for it, and there's an input that's formulaic, that is a custom-made case that's probably given me 5 hours a week of my life back.
Yeah. It's not changing the world, but it's sure having an impact for sure.
That's what are the things you see like that, that companies are actually empowering people to do? What's actually working for people that sit in a desk every day and work for a company?
Yeah. So one of the exercises that we do whenever we prefer to be on site when we're doing training, rapport building, you can help people or whatever. One of the first things we have them do is right now, anybody who's using the tools, they're using just a plain vanilla off the shelf version of AI. Most people have never taken the time to like say, well, how do I customize or personalize this? And all of the large language models have inputs where you can go into the settings and you can say, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is how I communicate, all those sorts of things. Once AI has that, the output that you get automatically becomes more customized, more bespoke to you, right? So one of the first things that we'll do with a client company is we have them use connectors. And those connectors that we'll have them attach are their inbox and their calendar. Then we have them run a prompt that essentially says, hey, look at the last 30 days of activity in these two, like my inbox and my calendar, and start to develop a pattern of life about my industry. Who do I communicate with? What's my writing style? What meetings do I attend? And then give me some output that I can copy and paste into those personalization settings in the models. Now, once we do that and we've got those connectors, the next thing I'm going to tell them to do is run a prompt that says, now look at the last 30 days and start to identify some places where AI should be doing something that I'm doing. Okay. And it always will surface. Like, we have it set to where it brings up 5 for people, maybe 1 or 2 but there's always somewhere they're like, oh my gosh, AI can do that. And then we have them do something that's called building a skill, and which is essentially an SOP that AI follows exactly every single time you need it to do that, so that there's no, you know, creative license involved in your output. It's following very strict rules. So if you just did that as a knowledge worker in any company, you would find, you know, first do the connectors, get it personalized, and then ask it where it can be helping you based on the connectors. You will come up with stuff, and all of a sudden, and we call it like layers, not leaps. And what we mean by that is that AI is not some event that's going to occur. It's, I'm doing this and it saves me 5 hours a week. Oh, and I do this thing and it saves me 15 minutes every time I do it. And all these little things, those layers like in a week, maybe it's no big deal. But as you continue to add those layers and those skills and save 15 minutes here and an hour there, by the end of a 90-day stretch, like you've got a significant amount of bandwidth. Your job is completely different. It's like fully supported by AI as compared to that drive-up window that I talked about where you ask AI a question, you get your answer, and you leave. So that would be some like – that's pro tip right there.
So you're free to use this as long as you credit me when you do, right? I describe everything you just said is you bring people into a company, and at the bottom layer, you're introducing them into a management and leadership program. So your mailroom, right? Your metaphorical mailroom becomes an entry level management and leadership program for every single person you hire if you do that. Because that like who sets SOPs? Well, managers set SOPs.
Yes.
But now you've got an entry level employee building their own SOP, and maybe hopefully their manager's going, yeah,
it's a great way to look at it.
Yep. Right. But but they're actually doing some reps and getting that memory down, that mental muscle memory of this is what this looks like. Like we have an AI course and that we run a few times a year. And one of the things we teach people, because they think it's all marketing. And when they get into it, it's a 40-day course. And there's a week where we focus on things like SOPs.
Yeah.
And we do that not just for them, but it's like, OK, now your business is scalable. Now you can hire help. Now you can sell your business, right? Your little five-man show that you run the whole thing, really, and the four people are just like joystick, and you're not there anymore. Why would I buy it other than for your customer base? But when you systemize it down to that level, now I'm buying a business. I'm not buying a brand.
Yeah.
And those are very different. Like if you're selling out at the end of your career, there's a big difference in your cash out price with those two things alone.
Yeah. And to that point, I advised in a lot of M&A during COVID. And what I realized was that an investor will pay more money if there's less risk involved.
Yes.
If you don't have your processes documented or you got key man situation, doesn't mean they won't buy the company, but you're not going to get a premium. When you create those skills, those SOPs in AI, somebody leaves. The next day, you could bring in somebody who's never done that role before. But if they can run Janet's skills, they're getting the output at the same quality that Janet got, you know, who had been there for 10 years. That reduces risk considerably in your business, whether you're going to continue to run it or you're going to, you know, solicit it for sale.
Even if I have to take maybe 2 weeks to fully get them up to speed, it beats the hell out of 2 months.
Exactly.
Right? Like, I mean, you know, like if I have this basic, you know, thing and then when Janet has a midlife crisis and runs off to the islands, I'm not stuck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
because that does. Yep. I can tell you for a fact that does. That. People you never thought would have that moment one day have that moment. Like I know I'm supposed to give 2 weeks and all, but in one instance, I completely understood the person got a very bad medical diagnosis and just said, "I'm not doing this anymore."
It happens. Yeah.
Okay, and I'm not going to be standing your way, but now what do I do? And we didn't have tools like this then. So we had to do old school. Yeah. Like it's like going from AutoCAD. This is back in the days of drafting, right? Like that's what we're like, use this tool efficiently. The other way we've talked about it a lot is like, if I give three people the same tools and let's say it's a full set of power tools, pneumatic air guns, nails, boards, building materials. One guy builds me a Craftsman house. The other guy builds me a bookshelf, and the third one ends up at the ER with a board nailed to his hand. Yeah. And so training the individual cannot be overlooked, I think. It's a funny joke, but it's not when it's your business that actually has the metaphorical nail in its hand now. You know?
Yeah.
What do AI workshops or hackathons, why do they work better than like a traditional training session? I know that's something you get involved with too.
A saying that I heard a long time ago that I respect is repetition is the mother of skill. And if I'm getting reps at something, and this happens, we work with a client and we have them build skills. We have them build custom GPTs and maybe in the ChatGPT environment, they'll build workspace agents. By the end of the session, they're like, you know what? I'm going to scrap the one I built because now I know how to build it. Like that was my first time. But by the end of the day, like, I should have done it this way. If I was sitting there lecturing and maybe just showing demonstrations and that sort of thing, first off, you never want to do live demos in a software environment because anything can happen.
No.
ChatGPT and Claude, they update regularly, and what was working yesterday may be wonky today. And I would rather them have that experience than me look like the idiot who doesn't know how to run ChatGPT because it's updating. I want them to say, hey, it's not uploading my file. Okay, let's check. Oh, yep, it looks like ChatGPT is in the middle of an update. So that they start to understand, like, this is what it's like to work with AI. It can be mm-hmm. frustrating. It can be wrong, of course, but like, this is the reality of it. It's not I push a button and Rosie the robot is cleaning the house. It's I push the button and nothing works. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Let me ask AI. Hey, AI, how come this isn't working? Oh, okay. Right. So I think that fingers on keyboards is the best way to learn this stuff for sure.
I would agree. And it's also weird how that happens. I have always said if you're doing live demos in a presentation, you hate yourself because yeah. that is when things will go wrong to the point of one of those tools I just mentioned with how I do my show prep work. It's not something yeah. I want to put out in the general world. But for the students in my class, I do bonuses, and I have wanted to show them how great my life is because of this tool. Right, and I'll go three or 4 weeks and, you know, 10 or 12 podcasts, and I won't try to video it. And I'll be like, today I have some extra time. I'm going to video it. I'll just use StreamYard like we're using right now, but I won't make it live, and I'll do some screen capture. It's like it knows. And it turns into a little bitch the minute it's like,
yep.
I'm like your kid. They do this thing that you're real proud of and they do it 100 times in a row. And when people come over, you're like, come show them. And then they just act like a subtard and they just
I
do it to goof you.
Can.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And you're like, he really does do it mostly. That's how I know it's not. And I know it's just the law of numbers. But yeah man, you want to like my view of like presentations and things, eliminate variables. Variables are evil, and they will Murphy you, man. You know, if it can go wrong, it will. Use screen captures. And sometimes it's not that it stopped working. It's that what you said doesn't work now does work, and maybe the person you're presenting to knows that. And so an example of that is, like, for a long time, I was like, when people would ask me how I do images for things, I would be like, so I go into GPT. I discuss the concept and I have it write me a Midjourney prompt.
Exactly. Yep.
And then Midjourney makes it. And then if there's like one thing, it's perfect except for one thing, Midjourney can't do that. So then I take it over to Gemini and Gemini uses Naba, Nana, whatever, and it fixes it. And why don't you just do it all in GPT? Because it doesn't do that. And then I went to talk at an event, and between the time I got in the airplane and the time that I got to the event, everything about that changed. GPT had released their new image
GPT
tool,
image.
And it's better than all of them combined.
Yeah.
And so the entire approach had to change. Well, if you're going to go stand in front of a room, that could have happened 12 hours ago and no one told you, because you're usually not like with your finger down on everything when you're in that mode, right? When you're going to go into talk, you're like, you're in airplanes, at least I knew it had happened, but I didn't know how good it was. One of the guys that was there that's a heavy user too said, hey, this changes everything because you take three tools into one now. And it did. And so that's how quick it moves. That's what I'm very nervous about when I write books about technology is trying to write them in a more of an evergreen format and then be very clear, like, and I could still be wrong.
We do the same thing with our certification. We found that the strategic conversation doesn't change that much. But the tactical use of the tool, we can't put that in the book. That's why we supplement everything with kind of like almost weekly we're providing videos, because the tools that we recommend are changing almost weekly.
And I think that's only going to continue and accelerate for a while. And then eventually we'll kind of level a bit. I also think I was just interested. This is not really about AI use, but what your thoughts on this are. I feel like right now all this hype about the data center stuff, and I'm not even going to get into the water usage and all, because the almonds use more water than data centers. But I'm also thinking, like, every disruption cycle I've ever seen has followed this pattern: boom, glut, bust.
Yeah.
And I mean technology or organic, like when cannabis got legalized, boom, glut, bust. Right. Yep. Didn't mean it went away, but if you look at search. When search came out, you're an older guy like me, like you probably remember when Lycos and Ask Jeeves had Super Bowl commercials, right?
Yep.
And what is it today? It's Google and nothing else really matters. Yep. And so I think these AI data center build outs, a lot of them may end up not you know, there's a lot of fiber that Quest put in the 90s that still has no light on it, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And I think mm-hmm. we could see that again, where there everybody's trying to be the Google of AI compute. And I think we might get overbuilt there. I'm not saying AI is going anywhere but up.
Yeah.
But Amazon owns the online shopping market. You see what I'm saying? Like, there's one number one and then a few like second tiers and everybody else is niche player.
You know, I think that the challenges that people are talking about today when it comes to the data centers are going to get solved pretty quickly. People that understand like the space, the opportunity to house data centers or data processing in space. Elon's got the ability to get that stuff up there. Like, I think that this won't be much of a conversation in, say, a couple of years. They'll solve it. And already, you know, Elon's outsourcing a lot of the builds that they did with their data center to Anthropic. They weren't mm-hmm. using it at Grok, so now it's turned it into a profit center for them. So, I'm not going to use AI because of the environmental impact.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you just introduced non-viability for your career. Like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you just got to do it. So I
feel like it's 1996 all over again, right? Like, I remember when the internet really came beyond just email to the office space. And I remember sitting in meetings where somebody would say, well, I did some research and actually this product set is probably going to be archaic in a few months. And we really need to be focusing on this next developer or something like that, you know?
Yep.
And then somebody sitting near the head of the table would say, did the internet tell you that? As though that freaking ad hominem fallacy attack negated the actual information this person had found. And that stuck around at least a little bit until like 05, 08. Yeah. And then I still remember fairly sophisticated seeming people, it'd be like, and go to our website, like 2013, 20, still saying it that way. It's like, bro, we don't need that. And I feel like we're seeing that same type of adoption curve. We're going from resistance to, you know, niche use case to, well, in specialized environments to where the high tech people use it. And then I think we'll eventually get to the, well, everybody knew. And, and the people that are the naysayers today will act like they never did that back then.
I guess the number one bit of advice, though, for anybody who's listening to this, regardless of your position, is you have a choice. And that choice is I'm going to just use it like Google or whatever. And that's fine. But a peer, an equal peer who is using this, as I mentioned earlier, they will be able to get more done, get it done faster and at a higher quality. And if that's not a concern for you, that's fine. You don't the impetus isn't that you need to learn AI, perhaps. But if you are. If you have a job, you got your own business, you're a knowledge worker for somebody else, you work in trade, it doesn't matter. AI once you start thinking in AI and you ask AI, how can you help me in my industry, my profession, and you start doing that, you will, if all you do is get time back to spend with the family or just not be on the grind, I mean, that's a win. So,
and your performance goes up, even if
100%.
And I don't mean because AI did a better job. I mean, because if I'm less stressed and I'm more able to give my bosses what they ask me for, then I'm going to do better work and I'm not going to be resentful. Right. And I mean, I tell people even on an individual level, use it to develop a better financial plan. And I'm not talking about robo investing. I'm talking about the discipline part. Right. Like, this is like, how do you make sure you're actually putting enough money into your investments is what I mean. Like, you can hire a good investment manager to do the other side, but you have to earn and not spend the freaking money.
Yeah.
And then you can create something like an accountability partner to go along with that. Now we're building that individual's performance floor up. And when I talk to people that run companies, there's a lot of entrepreneurs in this audience. And they'll say, well, you know, you say something like, you know, increase your leadership. We only need so many leaders. Like, so you don't want what I just said? Yeah. You don't want your employees to be more financially stable, more emotionally stable, and more accountable? Or you don't want them to, you know, create their own advisory board in AI and pressure test their ideas before they bring them to their supervisor? That's not what something you want. But like, you're bringing up a lot of good points there. Like, that's great, but you better have some way of firewalling anything proprietary. If it's a general plan with no specifics, but how many of those are valuable?
Yeah.
You know,
some research that we reference a lot, just to kind of drive that home. It was Stanford and Boston Consulting Group. They split two groups up. What they found was that the AI-enabled group, the B and C players, started performing at the A player level. So if you've got in your organization, you've got people that he's a good guy, but he's not the best at his role. If you can get those individuals using AI, all of a sudden, they're not the B player anymore. They're performing at the A player level because they know how to use this tool. So even if you don't want to use it, get your – and hell, your best people, once they start using it, of course, they're outproducing by 5X or more anybody else in the organization. So even if you don't want to do it, do your team a favor and give them the gift of upskilling for sure. You'll benefit from it.
How important do you think it is, though, that when you're trying to roll AI out into a company, that leadership actively and, you know, publicly known within the company is using it too?
I think it's very important.
I would agree with that, because employees naturally gravitate toward they don't know. Right. And there's just this animosity, especially like your lower rung that have never actually sat in the bigger chair. So they don't know what goes along with it. And they think all the bosses just sit around, smoke cigars and get fat every day. And so they already have this natural animosity. And then when you're telling them to do something and they're not doing it, even if they are, if you don't know they're doing it, what do you assume? Well, they're not doing it.
Yeah.
And I think that like some of the podcasts I've listened to talk about leaders coming back and saying things like, this is something I used AI, just addressing the company. I used AI for this, and here's what went wrong.
Yeah.
And here's how I fixed it, and here's what it wouldn't do for me.
Yep.
And that puts everybody on this kind of feeling like everybody's learning together, and it's okay if it doesn't work right out of the gate.
Yep. You know, the leaders who know how to use this stuff, because that's who reaches out to us. It's not somebody at the front line of a company. It's the decision makers, right? They're reaching out and saying, and when I start inquiring, like, they're on the train, man. They're loving it because they're doing amazing things. I'm always impressed when I find a leader who's just kind of figured this out on their own and they're doing stuff where I'm like, hey, that's pretty advanced use. You have that person in charge of your company. Like they're seeing around corners. They're not getting caught, you know, off guard by things. They're able to just really, their optics, their field of fire is much, much broader because they've got support of this tool. So if your leadership is not doing it, you're on the board, you're an investor in a company, and the leaders are like, it's good for them, but we don't have to worry about it. Wrong attitude for sure.
Are there some things in implementations you've done where you figured out the road is the problem? And here's what I mean by that.
Very regularly.
Okay. Yeah, so I guess you know where I'm going. Let me explain it though, so people understand your answer. Sure. So you go into a company and you improve efficiencies, but one of the things you don't know is that this program that they use doesn't actually work. And this requires a manual workaround process that one person knows how to do.
Yep.
And now you streamline everything else. And it's like speeding up all the stations on an assembly line. And then it gets to that one place. And now, you're making capacitors 100 times faster, but the one person that can screw them in can't screw all the capacitors in. And that's just one way that can manifest. The infrastructure on some levels is not prepared for the hyper efficiency that it can bring.
So the secret about, an AI implementation, it's not sexy. It's process. A big part of what we do is we go into the companies and we say, okay, and how do you do this thing that's a pain point? And then what do you do? And then who do you send it to? And what do they send you back? Like it's getting very granular with the process. And then what we realize is that the process itself isn't that efficient. Let's dial the process in and then introduce AI or agents or automations. But you don't want to just say, hey, whatever we're doing, let's just add AI, because, a lot of businesses have a lot of dysfunction. All you're going to do is just be more dysfunctional faster. And is that a win? I don't know. So that's the road itself is the problem. The road and the people, it's not the technology. It's the process and the person. If I can give me a day with those folks and that activities, you will have a successful implementation.
Yeah. I think, one of the things it seems like you're doing is you're having people that are being trained bring real work to training versus using simulations, right? Yep. Like, can you explain maybe why that's important?
Yes. You know your problems and pain points in your business way better than I do. And I would rather you, like, you know, like, this sucks. I hate doing it. I got to do it every Friday. We have to do this thing. But it sucks, right? If you can bring that to me and I can show you how to fix that, a couple of things are going to happen as far as, you know, change management. If you're walking around saying, hey, this AI thing's pretty cool because it's taking the crap work off your plate, other people hear that and they're not as afraid anymore about, like, as, you know, are they just training AI to take our jobs and those sorts of things, right? Mm. But secondly, like, just in general, the morale around the organization will lift. I get to spend more time in my job doing the part that I like the reason that I wanted this job in the first place, because I brought that real world problem to the training. We did a little build session. I was able to fix this. And now, instead of 5 hours on Fridays, it's 15 minutes on Fridays. I'm not burning midnight oil. I'm able to, you know, get home and whatever those things are. And that is, yes, it helps the business and those sorts of things. But if your people are on board with it, like, everything just moves so much faster, so much faster.
You want the guy that was down in the pit sawing the board to realize, hey, you're the one that's going to run the wheel. Yeah. Right. You're still going to feed the log, and you just don't have to eat sawdust for 10 hours a day anymore.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Because they get buy-in. I think the other thing is, like, this is a pattern I've noticed. It's way outside of AI, but it repeats inside. And that is, like, I'm deeply involved with permaculture, which is an agricultural system in short. And so you show somebody a design and a developed system that's, let's say, in the tropics, and they say, but it won't work for me because I live in northern climates. I'm in zone 5 in Pennsylvania. So then you show a system in zone 5 in Pennsylvania, and somebody says, well, I live in the tropics. It won't work for me. So unless it's exactly doing the thing that person does, there's this natural cognitive friction. And I think part of it, the more as I learn about neuroscience, the brain is an energy hog, right? Yes. Your brain on any given moment is using 20% of the energy in your body, and it only weighs 3 pounds.
Yep.
And so when anything requires additional cognitive functioning, unless you see true advantage in it, your natural response is to filter it out and say, this is actually a threat. I need to defend what I have and basically justify my laziness to not critically think. And to get past that, I have to give you an incentive. Like Charlie Munger always said, never question anything until you look at the incentives.
Yep.
And so the incentive then becomes, this is your work that you brought. Here's how you can do it. Well, I'm interested in that because that's me and I'm awesome. Right. You know, and like make it my life easier. That's awesome, too. But if it's like you're going to make your boss's life easier, no, it doesn't really get my juices going as much. You know?
Yeah. That's a great perspective for sure. Yeah.
What are maybe some of I know that probably some of the stuff you do has some proprietary nature and confidentiality, but can you give us maybe a use case or two? You can change the names of people to protect the guilty or whatever that you've actually seen in your implementations that have really helped some companies.
Yeah, one that we encountered early on that I like to share because a lot of our – so happens a lot of our clients tend to be in commercial construction. We were working with a builder out of Orange County, and it was just one of these things. We were on site with them, and we saw somebody doing something. What is that thing that you're doing? Oh, we're managing certificates of insurance where we have to make sure that we've got subs coming on, that they're insured properly, the insurance runs through their – you know, the finish of the project and all those sorts of things. And boy, it's a lot of work. We have to chase them up. They send us the form. The form's incomplete. And the CRM doesn't necessarily have all that information. So we've got this spreadsheet and we've got 3 people from my team and we're monitoring this inbox. And it was just like, to them, it was just the thing. It was just sawing the log and eating the sawdust, right? But we saw that and we're like, well, AI can monitor your inbox. It can look for those attachments. It can scan those attachments. And if it doesn't have this thing, it can send it back to the people and say, hey, we're missing this piece. If it does have the thing, it can update your spreadsheet and your CRM. And they're like, okay, let's do that. 24 hours later, we built version 1 of the solution. And across 3 people, it wasn't so painful that they were like, we have to address it. It was about 20 hours a week across 3 people doing that. Well, in 24 hours, we took it from 20 hours a week down to 2 hours a week. And the 2 hours was that human, that final 10% that we talked about, the human kind of spot checking and making, but that freed up 1,000 hours a year for that one company across those three people. One little activity like that. And those things are, every company has that big spreadsheet or the shared drive that three or four people have to manipulate, and because the CRM doesn't quite cut it, or you got a funky process or whatever. Every business has those. Start there. They're easy to fix and they'll save you those 1,000 hours a year.
That's awesome. And
very typical.
I think there is a huge case that can be made to individuals. And I think we have to get that buy-in from the individual, as well as leadership, because the people that destroyed the first sawmill were sawmen. Right. Yeah. They're supposed to be using it. So it's awesome when you can show that time-saving capability like that and do so in a way, you know, that doesn't eliminate a job. That makes a person more free to do more in their job.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ever tell anybody it's not going to eliminate jobs at all, because personally, I think there's a lot of times we have, if you send me into a 500 person company and I walk around and interview half of the people over a couple weeks, I'm coming back with a head chopping.
Yeah.
Because there's just, once you get to a certain size, people kind of learn the system. They learn the ropes.
Where to hide.
Where to hide and how to manipulate the system. Yeah. And then you realize, like, this person's been here a long time, and what they do is not completely unnecessary, but what they do actually doesn't take, but, you know, if they were actually doing it to the best of the ability 4 or 5 hours a week, and if I can absorb that using tools, whether it's AI or not, then I'm going to absorb that, and that person's going to go away. And that doesn't mean that person's a bad person or whatever. They may have been a mismatched hire, or they may have been hired during a time when the company expected more growth than it did, and they survived downsizing, because people like them. But it doesn't mean that they're adding to the bottom line. And people get very mad when you say that. I'm like, that's because you never signed the front side of a paycheck.
That's right.
You start finding signing the front side of a paycheck, you're going to view this a lot differently, because I'm not in business to give you a $70,000 a year job. That's not – I'm more than happy to pay you that and more.
I'm not a nonprofit.
But I am not here to provide jobs. I provide jobs because I have a mission as an entrepreneur. And I think that's one of the reasons people don't like it, I think – not everybody doesn't like it, but I think there's a lot of people, they know they're that person. I think if you're that person, you know you're that person, and then you feel like the crosshairs are on you. And I would tell that's the person with the opportunity, because there's no AI, sooner or later, those people end up liquidated, right? But if you adopt it now, then you can become the person that I will never fire is the person that, like, when I go on vacation – I say, well, that person's department, I'm not worried about, right? Yep. Or the person that when, like, the call comes in, I'm like, just call Steve.
Yeah.
If I say, just give it to Steve, Steve's never getting, unless I run out of money, he's never getting, everybody will go. I'll fire my mom. But Steve is staying if he's that guy. And I think that's what people need to be figuring. How do you become that guy or girl? How do you use AI to get there?
The person who knows how to use AI is not the first one that gets fired, guaranteed. If you find yourself in that situation where you're kind of unsure, start learning AI, start showing others the stuff that you're learning, start like introducing, hey guys, I did an AI certification. Hey guys, let me show you this AI thing. All of a sudden you become the AI guy, right? And your team, they don't get rid of the AI guy. The AI guy says, hey, Chris, do you have a minute? We're having a meeting and we got a couple questions. You got to to come in here and talk to the leadership team about AI. Opportunities will open up for you. And listen, the technology is not hard. There's nothing to be intimidated by. And then to address that like firing people, the size organizations that we deal with, they're not firing people, but what they're saying is we can expand without the expansion of headcount. That's pretty much what they're looking for. And if you can be that person who is allowing them to do that, you're Steve in this example. You're not going away.
You're not going anywhere.
No. So
Steve's getting a retention bonus.
Yeah.
Steve's getting a retention bonus, because I don't want Steve to go take his shit over to Cogswell Cogs. I want him to stay right here.
But right, here's something that's going to happen.
Yeah.
If Cogswell knows that Steve knows AI, Steve's going to get a call from Cogswell.
He's on the recruiter's list, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's another concern. Great for the employee, not so great for the employer. Poaching is,
that's always the case, though. Your best performers are always being seduced by your competition. When I was in sales, I had a personal headhunter.
Yep.
Literally like an agent. Like, hey, I don't want to do this for these people anymore. Go find me something better. And he would.
Yep.
You know, I mean, that's just part of, like, you need to run a good ship and your people might stay. That's
exactly.
Now, here's something I read recently, and I wanted your opinion on this, and then we'll kind of wrap up after it. A lot of kind of your corporate leadership types, especially in these bigger companies that I don't really think are using AI the way they say they are, have said something to the effect of the days of advisory AI, which is mostly what we've been talking about today, using LMs, creating custom agents, getting advice, using it for like helping to figure out scheduling or solve problems. Like, it's not that it's gone. It's just it's done. It's reached its peak. And now we need these active agents to go in and actually do things. I find that to be absolutely asinine. I don't think we've scratched the surface. I think we know what's possible. But what's being done isn't even like there. I don't know if there's a company out there. Let's say this is 100-person headcount that everybody that could be using AI is using AI with half the efficiency they could be, let alone all the efficiency. And I think that we need to do a lot more work on systems, training, and just the concepts of what can be done. And I think until we get people doing what you were saying earlier, like asking, how can AI help me do this? And that becomes the default. We can't even begin to talk about getting close to the peak of that yet. I think we're in the foothills.
Yeah. So I would say the friction in the adoption of the technology is the people. Great. We've got agents that can do all these things. But if I don't have somebody, if that person on my team isn't using the agent, it doesn't matter. Right. And people aren't going to jump from, hey, I'm not really sure how to use AI to now I'm building, managing, and architecting agentic structure. That's not going to happen. They have to start with, oh, this is kind of like Google. Oh, wait a minute. It can do this. Oh, it can do this. Like that learning curve has to happen and be exhausted before the individual can say, oh, I'm brand new to AI. Let me start building agents. Ain't going to happen. Yeah. So just because the technology exists doesn't mean we're going to see it applied as broadly as the media might suggest or that companies want you to believe.
And these companies are talking about risk. Like, you want risk? You start letting an AI agent make modifications to the pricing in your product catalog that feeds from a database out to an active website that lets people order. That could be a problem.
And that's happened.
A risk, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it accidentally orders 100,000 units from a vendor and you needed one.
Yep.
Like, there's where your risk is. The stuff we're talking about is fairly low relative risk compared to things like that. So they're calling for this. And that's why I asked the question earlier about the road's not done yet. You're putting a Ferrari on a dirt road. You put a Ferrari that's autonomous driving on a dirt road and you give it a GPS map that shows where all the roads are, but it doesn't know it's dirt.
Yeah.
You're going to have a wrecked Ferrari.
Yep.
Bad.
Yep.
Right.
No, and I can tell you, Jack, I talk to a lot of executives. The things that you've said and the positions that you hold on this, like you're thinking about AI the right way, for sure. You're using it the right way. So for all the listeners here, when Jack talks about using AI, like pay attention to what he's doing because he's an expert level user. Let's put it that way.
What I try to be careful with, though, is because what I can't say that I do on a daily basis is run an organization with it.
Yeah.
Because I am like my wife, you talk about technophobe, like we're still working on cut and paste sometimes, it seems like.
Yeah.
So I use it every day for myself and I try not to oversimplify and tell companies how easy it's going to be to implement this. But I do think that starting at leadership and then propagating down works really well because the leadership knows what winning looks like.
Yep.
And they then can figure out, well, when is this thing going to do some stupid stuff? And how do I build the training program to account for that? So the person that hasn't got, my 15 years of experience can at least know this. go to your boss and
tell him
it doesn't look right, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's where companies like you come in, your company comes in, because you can go in and you have that experience of working, you know, kind of at that middle tier, upper tier, you know, probably anything below public, you know, companies that measure, say, you got companies measuring tens of millions versus billions. It's still big organizations. It has unique challenges. It's the kind of companies I work for back when I used to work for and run companies in that size. And there's a lot to it, because you assume it's just going to work, and it's not. And I think the other thing is communication has to be strong, because you're pretty sure you told them what to do, but did you? You're pretty sure you told them what not to do, but did you? You know? And then I guess I bet you've heard this one, but what about the employee that says it has to be right because AI did it? You know, and I don't think that's the problem they make it out to be, though.
Yeah, I don't either. If anything, I deal with a lot of people who don't understand it well. So I learned this a long time ago. A confused mind always says no. If I don't understand something, it's easier. There's no danger for me saying, nah, no, thank you. Right.
Yeah.
And I think where we're at with AI, at least my experience, is that, and we do surveys before we go into the room to kind of take people's temperature and what their issues are. And a common theme that I see are people saying, how do I trust it? Because there were some stories early on. Now I think it's a lot different, but fair question, especially if you don't understand how the tools work and you don't know how to use them. So I see actually a lot of people that are kind of cautious about how can I trust this information, right? Especially in finance and things, engineering and construction. There's a lot of, you know, low tolerance for error, but that's what we're seeing a lot of.
Let's do these comment questions. We've got three of them here, and then we'll let you go. Odyssey Camper says, if I develop something with AI, who owns the IP? The AI company, me, if a private account, or the company that employs me? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so Odyssey Camper, I think that you might have done this already. Take that question, put it into AI, and see what answer you get. And even though I can give you some perspective, I want you to get those repetitions of like creating that new reflex. Okay.
Yeah.
My position would be, regardless of what you did, if you created on company's time for the company, in most cases, the company owns that, right? Look at your employment contract, but that's a very common arrangement. So, I would, especially if you're doing it in the company's account. But even if it's on your own account.
Yeah.
So,
I think the question of IP relating to the AI company is something we haven't fully hashed out yet. On the company thing, that has a lot to do with whatever employment contract you sign. Like when I would get job offers back in the day, I would always run them by my attorney before I would sign them. And one company I worked for in particular, the way it read, if I had an epiphany about how to do something that was remotely in any way related to anything the company did, which was basically technology, so that's everything, while I was taking a dump at midnight, they owned it while I was employed. And it was like, well, I'm not going to sign this. You know, if it's something you developed with a customer while you're on company business, of course you hired me to work for you. So my work is for you. And so I think that's what to look at. But definitely if the company owns it, they own it. But like you said, I agree. If you're on company time when you're doing it, if I'm paying you to sit at a desk and you're designing a competitive product and I find out, you're going to have legal trouble, because that's a really dark area to go down.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's what he's asking it. And then Darkwing Dave just says, something we were talking about. He just said, comment, SIWY, shoot it work yesterday.
The live demo conversation.
Risk, right, you know, with any tech. And then Farmer Cheryl, this is a very specific niche question, but how to advance AI use and adoption in the permaculture, regenerative agriculture, soil health, and microscopy space? I don't know. I'd say start using it yourself.
Yep. So, Cheryl, there is an approach that we would take. We call it reverse prompting. It's a proprietary thing. We teach it, but I would use a reverse prompt and then ask that question. The reverse prompt basically says, who are the top three experts in the world when it comes to solving this problem? And in your case, it would be advancing AI and using AI adoption, permaculture, et cetera. Once it gives me those three, the next step in that reverse prompt is saying, okay, if these three people were to come together and combine their framework for solving this problem, what would that combined framework look like? And AI is going to synthesize that. Great. Third part of a reverse prompt is, now using this framework, how do I advance AI use and adoption of permaculture regenerative? Like, you ask the question. And I think that if you were to do that, you'd be blown away with the level of accuracy and the quality of, like, because you're not just saying, hey, AI, you're saying, who are the experts at this topic already? What would they say? And AI's, you know, it's got all their information. So we're always impressed with the output we get from a reverse prompt in this kind of situation.
Awesome, man. Well, Chris, this has been a fantastic,
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate the opportunity.
I really appreciate you taking your time out of the day and answering these questions for us and spending time with us and telling us about what you're doing, man. So tell people about your company a little bit, though, because there's some fairly large entrepreneurs in this audience. They might need you.
Sure. So, and Darkwing Dave, my pleasure. Our company is called Chief AI Officer, not cheap, chiefaiofficer.com. We've heard that. And I was like, no, wrong message. So it's chiefaiofficer.com. We actually started the International Association of Chief AI Officers, blah, blah, blah. We know this topic well. There you can go find out more about our company, the certifications that we offer, the services that we offer. But as far as services, if you are a lower middle market sized company and you're asking, like, what are we going to do about AI? Like, we're very good at answering that question for you. Happy to kind of run you through some audits that we do, opportunity audits that we do to kind of show you where the low hanging fruit would be and actually give you like a real dollar value of, hey, if you did this with AI, this is what the forecast is that it would be worth to you. So, always happy to help. I also, if you're interested in AI, I have a podcast called Using AI at Work. Again, it's non-technical, and guess what we talk about? Using AI at work. And then as Jack saw, I'm regularly posting things on LinkedIn about the experiences that we're having with companies. And a lot of times it's like from the company's location, like, hey, we just wrapped up. Here's some lessons we learned today, blah, blah, blah. So there's always like real world things happening. I'm not that big on theory. I'm much more, well, let's break it and fix it and see how that happens. So happy to help any of you for sure.
Well, Chris, again, I appreciate you,
Thanks,
man. I'll let everybody know everything he just listed. Most of you guys listen to audio, driving in a car, working out in a gym or something. The audio version will be over on my site, thesurvivalpodcast.com, about 30 minutes after we finish this live. And all the things that Chris mentioned, how to get in touch with him, more info about his company, his podcast, will all be in the show notes over there. Again, thanks, Chris.
Beautiful. My pleasure. Thanks, everybody. Go use AI.
All right, real quick, guys, we're going to wrap up fast. I don't have an item of the day for you because I'm just shilling my book this week because, well, that's what good authors do. Again, Laws of Life, Book 2, Now Design the System for Your Life. We have moved up. I mean, while we were on the air, we have moved up on the bestsellers list a little bit in a few categories. So we're making an impact. I'm getting the spam emails from the supposed agents that are going to make me famous or whatever. I don't need them, but I do need you guys to get your hands on a copy of this book. I do need you to share this book with other people. And I really think it can help a lot of younger people that are kind of in that 15 to 35 year old range right now. If you're thinking of like people in your life to get a copy of this book for, a lot of people have been sold not just a lie, but a whole package of lies about how much harder things are today. Some things are harder. If we don't admit that, then we're doing a disservice to the youth. But overall, there has never been a better time to be alive. It's not even close. Tom Woods just interviewed me about this book, and that was kind of his title to the episode after we did it. Like, it's not even close how much greater the opportunity is today. Think about the discussion that I just had with Chris for about an hour and 20 minutes. Think about the things that you can do, the things that you can spin up, the things that you can turn up today with a product that costs you $20 to $50 a month. Think about how much you can learn from a tool like Notebook LM. But you can't learn everything from AI. You do need to learn from people that have actually done. That's what this book is. It is 16 laws of life that have made me the success that I've been fortunate enough to become. And I don't say that with any ego. The reason I can tell you I know it works is because if it worked for me, it has to work for you. I'm not that great. These are just, they're laws of life. I do call them jokingly Spirico's laws, but they're really just natural laws of life that when they're followed, they lead to success. And when they're ignored, instead of getting compounding success, you get compounding failure. So check the book out again, Laws of Life, Book 2, Now Build the System for Your Life. And the audio version is up and running already. Again, it's Virtual Voice. I'm not in love with Virtual Voice. I picked the best voice I could find that does the best job. It does mispronounce a word or three, but it's the way I can actually give you the book in audio from a cost-effective manner. Thank you for tuning in today. I'll catch you guys tomorrow with Expert Counsel Q&A show for the day or the week. And for those that are new to the show, Expert Counsel shows are not on YouTube. They're audio only because I have answers submitted to me from our group of about 18 experts, and I do need more questions for the expert council. So if you have a question for any member of our expert council, shoot it over to me, jackofthesurvivalpodcast.com, TSPC expert in the subject line. Tell me who the question's for. Ask your question in one sentence, hit return, then give me details. Then we all know what you're asking, and we get a much better answer that way. But I do have plenty of material already for tomorrow, so we'll definitely have a show tomorrow. Check us out then. That'll be episode 3,863. Have a great day, and I'll catch you on the show.
Said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.